How about no?
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
That's a big no.
It's a huge no.
At Kiefer Kia, no down payments, no payments until May 2020. Plus, get $6,000 Kia Motors cash back to you on a new 2019 Kia Sorento S. Kiefer Kia wants to approve you. 2020 Kia Sportage LX with zero due at signing, zero security deposit. Just $219 per month on a 36-month lease.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yes, yes, yes.
Kiefer Kia says yes to no down, no payments until May 2020. Plus, get $6,000 cash back on a 2019 Kia Sorento S. Yes, $6,000. Nobody works harder to put you in a new Kia than Kiefer Kia. So if you are looking for a new car, why go anywhere else?
Oh, yeah, baby.
KieferKia.com, where we do sell cars every day. Call 844-465-4333 for all the details. On approved credit, Sportage lease with $3,100 Kia lease cash applied. Lease based on 10,000 miles per year. Title license and 150 title and registration processing fee included. No payments for 90 days through Oregon Community Credit Union. Interest accrues from start date of contract. Requires auto pay. Other conditions apply. Offers not in combination expires 4/2/2020.
KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Whoop, woo! Welcome. We've made it to the 5 o'clock hour on a Wednesday, and I'm going to doff my cap for all of us. So thanks for tuning in. Had a great conversation with Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. In the 4 o'clock hour, we've had a crunch exchange. You guys are loading us up with great, impactful, game-changing rule changes. And I tell you what, I came up with a pretty good list, and you guys at least doubled it. From moving the goalposts from the goal line back to the end line where they once were, 90 years ago, and then back. Free agency, huge. Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier in 1947, enormous. The Gogolaks, Pete and Charlie Gogolak, came over in the 1960s, escaped from behind the Iron Curtain, and became the first soccer-style kickers in NFL history. And obviously, now there are no straight-on kickers. Everybody's a sidewinder. Shot clock in basketball, incredible. Expanding the brackets to 64 after the 1984 season. That's an interesting one. And as far as the shot clock, it was implemented in the NBA starting with the 1954-55 season. And it went right to 24 seconds. In college, it's been more of a gradual thing. And it's crazy to think that there never was one into the 1980s. I mean, when Georgetown got upset by Nova in 85, there was no shot clock. There was the next year when Louisville won the Natty. And then first... So for the first 8 years, it was 45 seconds. Then from 1993 through 2015, March Madness, it was 35 seconds, and now it's 30. We learned about that goaltending was allowed until 1944, and we tried to envision if you if you were allowed to goaltend now. It's crazy. We also came across a part of history where, there was no dunking for 10 years in college, a rule that was changed because of then Lou Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The three-point line, absolutely huge in both college and pro. And let me tell you something. It went from it doesn't exist to impactful, like forget about it. For an older crowd, one of the things that was attractive about the old ABA, American Basketball Association, which existed from 1967 through the end of the 1976 season, where the New York Nets, led by one Julius Erving, won the title, they had the red, white, and blue ball and the three-point line. College. Oh, that's right. The NBA approved the three-point shot for the 1979-80 season, which is ironic. That was as Magic and Bird arrived. And then they didn't have it. So if you were an ABA player, you had it. Then if you were on a team for like Indiana and San Antonio and the Nets, and now I'm spacing on Denver. The Nuggets were the other team that was kept alive as part of the merger. Then there was no three-pointer through, you know, the first year of the merger happens to be the first year, the only year the Blazers won the championship. So 76-77, because if you remember, the Philadelphia team that they played had the good doctor and a guy by the name of George McGinnis, who the year before were both in the ABA. So, especially for around these parts, kind of impactful there. But the three-point shot didn't start at the collegiate level until 1986 for the 87 tournament. And Indiana won it, not solely because of, but they had a sniper named Steve Alford. Providence made the Final Four that year with a really good three-point shooter. Rick Pitino's point guard was current Oklahoma City coach and two-time national champ at Florida, Billy Donovan. And a lot of people were curious about the Indiana team that won it all because, as you know, their head coach was Bobby Knight, a guy who basically was against transfers. He was against zone defenses. And as you might imagine or are aware of, kind of stubborn and pigheaded. But then the rule changed. And, you know, adjust or die. And, that team that grinded it out and got the Keith Smart baseline jumper to win the title against Boeheim and Syracuse because Derek Coleman couldn't make a foul shot. I was rooting for Indiana. I don't know why I'm acting like I'm aggravated. But, that was the first year that the three-pointer was in college, and they had a really good team. Daryl Thomas, three guys who got what I'm going to call a cup at the pro level. Ricky Callaway, Keith Smart, and Dean Garrett. Alford was a 22-point-a-game guy. Indiana scored a bunch of points. I mean, back then they averaged about 83, 84 points a game, which was substantial. And Alford for the season shot 53% from downtown. He took six a game, made three, which was a lot back then. Because, if you know the history, it went from being, I don't know if I want to call it gimmicky, but to being a major part of many teams' strategy. And Alford took 202 three-pointers that year. Just as an example, a team that was still running and gunning a couple years away from becoming a powerhouse, made it all the way to the Elite Eight that year with Armon Gilliam, UNLV, to hold up. They had a guy by the name of Freddie Banks who took 358 three-pointers, and Gerald Patio, he took 237. So they went from it doesn't exist to it's a focal point of our offense. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So good stuff from you guys. Really appreciate the input and you sticking with us. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Robbie. Robbie, good afternoon. How's it going?
Steve, how goes it? Yeah, thank you. George McGinnis, I think, was on the one team you're space on in the ABA, the Pacers.
Right. I don't know why I couldn't think of that, but yeah, there you go. I'm like, I know where Dr. J was because I was living there. But yeah,
right.
Totally bricked.
And then one other thing, I haven't heard anybody mention it, but the freshman eligibility for hoops, that was pretty big.
Oh, yeah, because into the 70s even, you know, guys like Kareem and Walton could not play as freshmen. Huh. That's a great one. I mean, obviously, when you think about the one-and-done rule, it's pretty
right.
Impactful.
Definitely.
Ah, nice. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Be well.
That's a good one. When did freshmen become eligible to play football and basketball? I would say the 70s post Walton, so that's 74. Although, you know what? I think Marcus Johnson was a freshman in 73, so it might have been right around then. If anybody knows the answer, you know, obviously we'll get to it during a break. But as far as here it goes, 1972, football and basketball followed suit and allowed freshmen to play. So there you go. I was thinking Marcus Johnson on the 73 team, I wound up bringing up an article written in 2015, and that's pretty substantial. I mean, there was a time, I remember, when freshmen couldn't play football, and a lot of people were just like, kind of why the NFL will only allow a guy who's been out of high school 3 years. I mean, there's actually an element of safety involved. I mean, you, 1 year, and I know bigger, stronger, faster right now. I mean, when we took a look at Jonathan Stewart as a freshman, it was like, well, this guy looks like he got cut out of granite from Mount Olympus. He looked as big as the average NFL guy, but as a freshman. But so, like, for example, if you would be a freshman this year, you can't play in the NFL this year, you can't play in the NFL next year, you can't play in the year after that. It has to be 3 years removed. You could say you have to be in college for 3 years, but we know that's not always the case. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Title IX, certainly major impact. Was that 72 or 73? It was one of those years. But yeah, freshman eligibility is big. Three-point line is huge.
Hi, Steve. I have an idea that I think will take this in now a completely different direction. But barring the ones like the rules that had to be changed to allow people of color to be able to play sports and Title IX for equal representation for women in sports, taking those off the picture, are there any of these rules that you would, for either chaos or just entertainment's sake, want to add back to the game? Because for me, if you're able to throw goaltending back into the NBA right now, I think it would become the most fun and interesting sport ever. Because all of the three-point shooters that are so good at shooting the basketball from 9 miles away, there's no point in shooting that shot because it's in the air for forever, and you can just get goaltended away.
You are way too in love with this idea of goaltending. I don't think it's coming back. Call me nuts, but I don't think so.
What if Adam Silver has a fever dream and he wakes up and he's like, scoring is too high in basketball. All of these games that are in the hundreds and they're scoring too many points. We need to cut things down. We need to be about defense. Look at these pitcher's duels that are so exciting. Hockey games in the playoffs that are 3-2 and they're going into overtime and it's so intense because basically the next basket is going to win the game. We need to bring that intensity to basketball and maybe let a game get occasionally into double digits. We're bringing back goaltending. I mean, I don't know like how people would feel about it. I feel like the players would probably revolt and they'd, you know, probably kick Adam Silver out before the rule actually went into place. But I mean, seeing a game actually played with legal goaltending would be tons of fun.
Yeah, I think for an exhibition, I don't think the league would survive, as every single solitary rule basically we've made does what? Adds to scoring. And now all of a sudden, you're not going to just detract from scoring. You're going to make it impossible to score in the highest scoring game we watch.
But then, think about like the J.R. Smith in the 2017, 2018 finals, whatever it was, when he forgot the score and it just like he just let the game go into overtime. Like, imagine if you had a moment like that where somebody's just like chucking up a three and the guy forgets he can goaltend because he's never been able to goaltend before. And boom, there goes the three pointer. And, you know, all of a sudden you got to a two-point lead instead of being down by one just because somebody forgot about the rules. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be really interesting to see for a couple of games how these guys felt, and then they would all, you know, probably just refuse to play under these rules.
By the way, how about the over-under? From, you know, remember I was talking during the season? Man, this is going to be over 237 to 17. The over-under is now 17 the previous season was 237.
Yeah, I mean, just throwing it out there, a weird idea. I don't know, what if they moved the pitcher's mound, or they raised the pitcher's mound, but they also moved it back a little bit to kind of maybe balance things out? How does that work? Do you guys still try and throw as hard as they can from 60 feet, 6 inches? What if they moved it to 61 feet and they raised the mound up a little bit? How would that change things? I don't know. What if you eliminated... you brought back the two-line pass or something in hockey so you could really see the skill of the skaters and the stick handling as opposed to just being able to sling a pass 180 feet and it's just tape to tape on the other guy. Just really, you know, bring something back to add a little bit of flavor so we can, for us youngins like me, realize how bad the sports were back in the 70s and 80s or whatever before these rules came into play.
Wow. So you want just no scoring. You want, how about in hockey, you're allowed to use a 6x4 stick where you just keep it out in front and you have like an area twice the size of a puck with which to shoot through. Otherwise, there's no scoring there either.
Maybe, yeah. Let the goalie pads be as big as they want them. Let sumo wrestlers be goalies so they block up all the space and you give them the pads that cover up all the holes. Why not, man? Let's try and figure out how to make these games as weird looking as possible with as little scoring as possible.
Weird, all right? I'm going to give you that.
Thank
and
you.
We'll just leave it at that. All right, 284. 8571. I don't even want to do the show anymore. You've ruined basketball for me. Thanks a lot. What else did we have? There's another one that remember before the 1996 college football season, what did they decide? NMT, no more ties. And I was always of the opinion that Graziani to Wilcox, the Oregon Fresno State opener in the 1996 season, was the first overtime game ever played in college football. On a technicality, we're right because it was the first regular season overtime. I never knew that the 1995 Las Vegas Bowl between Nevada and Toledo actually was the first overtime game. So I don't know if they were testing it and it just happened to be a game that went into overtime. But ever since, I mean, I always thought, how ironic was it that they started the rule of no more ties and all games are going to be settled with that stupid Kansas plan. And it ended up that we were all watching it because it was an Oregon game, even though it was on the road. but that was the first regular season overtime game. Something I learned today. So the three-point shot, and yeah, we were talking about the NHL. I have a couple of hockey people out there that the puck could be passed from behind the blue line into center ice, and the rules governing equipment in 1967-68, they addressed the issue of curved sticks, limiting the curve of the blade to an inch and a half. And if you grew up around hockey, just let's forget the plastic sticks for a while, which you used for street hockey, which you could literally find like a crack in the cement or the sidewalk and bend the crap out of it so you could lift the puck better. But guys used to have like blow torches in the locker room to bend their wooden sticks. And that was always a sight. And in 2013, to kind of piggyback on what Nick was saying, the maximum size for goaltenders' pads was reduced. So if there was ever a common theme among modern-day rule changes, it was always fans want more offense, fans want more points, fans want more scoring, and it always kind of dumped on the defense. Somebody said, just use a boat oar. Okay. All right, let's get to a phone call while we have some sanity left. To the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, let's bring in Dan. Dan, good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm good, Steve. I'm good. Thanks for entertaining us again. So I'm a track guy, so how about some and I'm a pole vault. I still pole vault. I'm a master's pole vaulter. So there's been a bunch of rule changes in the pole vault over the years.
Okay, that, like?
Some of them are kind of amazing. Way back in 68, Casey Kerrigan was a senior in high school. He made the Olympic team. He went to Mexico City, and he would have made the finals, but his pole, vaulting pole, passed under the crossbar after he cleared it. And back in the steel pole days, that was a miss, and when they went to fiberglass and guys started flying way over the top of their poles, they just hadn't changed the rule. So he cleared the bar that would have got him into the final, but his pole went under the crossbar, so he didn't make the final. So that's one big rule, which was and now it doesn't matter. Your pole can still knock the crossbar off and make it a miss, but if it passes underneath and doesn't knock the bar off, it's okay. And then just about 10 years ago, after Sergei Bubka had jumped 20-foot 1 3/4. Some other guys set some American and other country records where they put their hands on the bar, crossbar, and they bent it down with the fiberglass crossbar, and then they'd steady it as they went over it. And So there were some records set where guys, Joe Dial actually set the American record at 19 6 1/4, and he bent that bar down to about 18 10. And he managed to balance it, and it stayed on, so it was a record. So they changed that. So now, in all levels of pole vaulting, if you touch the bar with your hand, it's a miss. And then the final thing, it used to be you got 2 minutes between attempts. You got 2 minutes. They call your name. You got 2 minutes to jump. But, you know, everything's got to be faster these days. So now you only get a minute. So you've got to have yourself ready to go. And if you're not running down the runway within a minute, it's a miss. So there's a whole bunch of rule changes for you.
No, A, I like the track and field info, and B, anytime we can get a Sergei Bubka reference in there, I am all in. So, appreciate the call, man. Great contribution. Thank you so much. One more call before a break to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How you doing?
Interesting rule change. Lacrosse. One of the greatest lacrosse players of all time was Jim Brown. He was an All-American running back at Syracuse and an All-American lacrosse player. And you know how the lacrosse, when the players have the ball in their in the net on their stick, they have to keep it moving. And the reason was, is it was changed after Jim Brown graduated, because he used to take that and clamp it against his chest, and he was so strong and so big that nobody could knock it away, and he would just rush the goal and then flip the ball into the goal.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I remember growing up, my dad used to tell me that when they used to talk about the greatest athletes of all time, he shouldn't be left out because he was a standout at two sports. And
he was All-American in lacrosse, All-American in football.
I didn't realize that they changed the rule because of him.
Yep.
Mike, that's awesome. Yep. That is awesome.
Okay. We'll see ya.
All right, take it easy. Somebody said it's not along the lines, and it has nothing to do with the rules, but before Bo Jackson, before Danny Ainge, I guess, and before Deion Sanders, who are some of the original two sports guys? Maybe we should save that for tomorrow's show, because I do know, I don't know what, I'm such putz, I'm trying to think of what baseball team he played with, but the late great Hall of Famer, who was the power forward for the New York Knicks when they won their two championships a million years ago, 1970 and 73. He was also a pitcher for, I think it was the Chicago White Sox, while he was an NBA player. So that's kind of an interesting duet. We'll get to that list tomorrow. But right now, what do you say we take a break? And we'll return with more sports talk coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Well, I think what it may impact, Greeny, is the amount of trading you see, because if you're leaving the same amount of time on the clock, there is less time for teams to communicate with each other and turn in the picks, and therefore you may see less trading than in other years. Usually we see teams jumping up and all around the draft board, and maybe we'll see it again, but I know there are people that are skeptical that that can happen under these circumstances.
Hey, Shefty.
He's talking about the impact of this virtual draft on trades. I wanted to kind of piggyback on that a little bit, but first, we welcome you back to a Sports Talk, the Wednesday edition here on 95.3 The Score. Quick shout out to our friends at the two pubs that are open for delivery and pickup service. First, Beer Garden on West 6th as you hit the Wit. What they're doing is until 7 o'clock, if you go to their website, beergardenme.com, they have pickup and delivery, including food and beverages, because, of course, you know, no patrons inside until it's safe. So you can order online through 7 o'clock. Again, Beer Garden Me. Then there's also Public House, online publichousehub.com. They have curbside pickup available. They're on A Street in Springfield. Again, if you go to their website, publichousehub.com, click the order now button. That's for food only. So, like you said, and we've said many, many times, it's a difficult time. A lot of people trying to keep their heads above water, their businesses afloat under these just extremely difficult circumstances. And this is their way. And no, we're trying to do it at least a couple times a week. And every place I've dealt with, it's, you know, you call them, then you could call as you're pulling up on your cell, and it's like, come out, roll your window down, you know, do debit card information or whatnot over the phone. The contact is limited. There's gloves and masks. Drop it in your car, and you're off. You get something great to eat. They get to keep their businesses open. So, you got that going for you, which is nice. And we appreciate Colby and all the great people at that triumvirate of bars, Tap and Growler, the original Fifth and Pearl downtown Eugene, does remain closed during the pandemic. All right, so I was talking – God, I was talking about general managers and Adam Schefter.
Hey, Schefter.
By the way, Somebody was talking about a rule change, which has been a real good theme today. And I typed out like about 16 or 17, and I've written in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, at least 15 others that you guys have come up with. Once upon a time in the NBA, you would get three chances to make two foul shots and two to make one. And it was implemented in the 1950s. If you were fouled in the backcourt, think about that. A backcourt foul was viewed differently, and you would get three to make two if the team who commits the foul was over the foul limit. By 1979, they extended the penalty for flagrant fouls in the act of shooting, if you missed, and fouls due to the swinging of the elbows. But prior to the 1981-82 season, they abolished both of those rules. So if you were, you know, basically went, if you were over the limit, you shot two. As it used to be, what would happen in games, and I distinctly remember this in the late 60s, early 70s, certain teams had a scrub who would come in and give a foul. So here's the circumstance. You put in your 11th or your 12th guy. You're down a couple points. You have to foul, but you don't want one of your star players to pick up a foul. So you bring a guy in. He fouls. It would be a one-shot foul if you were under the limit. And obviously the guy at the line, you could stop play and make your substitution and have your top gun back in there for the offense. So that was a thing until just prior to the 81-82 season. All right, general managers in football are up in arms about this draft, even though they're playing by the exact same rules, exact same access, a level playing field. Well, I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek. I mean, teams like the Jets, Browns, Lions, Raiders, and Dolphins are usually run by incompetents and who are just in over their heads against the other football minds around the league. But save that. They're talking about these problems doing it via technology. And even though it's not that complicated, and why do I say this? I understand a lot of this connectivity. Trust me. If I get it, these guys who were all lawyers and college graduates and successful in the business world could figure this crap out. But and let's face it, it's 2 weeks from tomorrow, the draft, and it's only 32 teams. It's not like they're trying to connect society, and they've got their IT guys working on it now. There's going to be coverage on ESPN. You could use email. One guy was talking about his playbook getting hacked. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're going to post your playbook online during the draft? Do you use the same exact playbook as you did last year? What if there's a different coach? What if there's a different quarterback? What if you have a new coordinator? Schematically, it's different. It's like, that seemed like the whiniest thing yet. All right, let's take one call before we this show's just flying along. Thanks a lot, guys. Your input today has been just tip-top, made this a really fun show, just kind of zoomed along. I can't tell you how much we appreciate your engagement. Let's get to the phones. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in Stephen. Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Steve Dannon. I'm going to be 32 years old, same age as Stephen Curry, this Saturday. And I want to say, what is your gut telling you about Stephen Curry? Do you think for the future he should retire or just continue playing basketball at his young age?
Appreciate the call, Steven. Why would Steph Curry retire? He's making like $36 million a year. He's in his prime. Now he's healthy. I don't think it's really on the table unless Steve knows something we do. By the way, here's a topic suggestion. Somebody says, best athletes turned musicians? Wait a minute. Is that even a thing? I know, actually, Bernie Williams is a classically trained guitarist, and who was the – oh, man. He was a basketball player and then a jazz guitarist, I think, and he passed away. I'm a total idiot. I really blew this one. But athletes turned musician. I don't know that that is a widespread topic. Maybe not. Waymon Tisdale. That's it. Gotta love Google. I Google in Oklahoma basketball player jazz guitar, and up pops Waymon Tisdale, who passed away young age, 45 years old. But back to the whiny GMs. We were talking about technology and email, and what would concern me would be more of, are they saying that each team would have an IT guy in their home? I mean, if it's somebody you don't know, how much do you want him touching stuff during this pandemic? But I can't imagine. I mean, here's a perfect example of why technologically I don't think this is going to be a problem at all. I mean, you know, they'll have safeguards in regarding connectivity. Once you're connected, when it's your turn, just, you know, hi, I'm with Denver. We're picking Justin Herbert or whatever. I mean, in April of 1990, we did a teleconference call. Me and two buddies were in Eugene. There was one of their friends in Palo Alto, Durham, North Carolina, Wayne, New Jersey, New York City, and Washington, D.C. We were able to do that for what we termed at the time a rotisserie baseball draft. So, I don't see this being that big of a problem. Somebody says, you know, hackers can do it, but what are you going to put online? I mean, isn't it a matter of, you're connected, you could be texting back and forth with your other personnel guys. I mean, first of all, you pick, then you go 31 more picks. So it's like, all right, so who's on the board? Who are our top three? And then, you know, figure it out from there. Oh, by the way, somebody just texted our Homer Simpson drop. Oh, the nerds are doing it.
But Steve, I understand, like, the simplicity of, like, pulling off a roto draft over the phone is very simple for fantasy baseball. You get a list of players, and yeah, you can kind of make it happen. But for the NFL draft, you have all of these GMs that are constantly in a room with all of their scouts, their GMs, their coaches, their staffs, their owners, and then they're on the phone talking with other GMs that are trying to work out deals on trades and if that's going to happen. And they need, it's not just like the commissioner is just going to, like, Skype in with Cincinnati for 10 minutes and be like, okay, who's your pick? And then all of a sudden when he's done, hang up, and then he's going to go to Washington and be like, okay, Washington or Cincinnati picked Joe Burrow. You guys have 10 minutes with me on your call for your next. But, like, all of these teams have to somehow be connected together while also this has to get broadcast on TV somehow. Like, it sounds very simple, but I think it's maybe a little bit more complex than we think. Like, being able to set up the Skype call or the Zoom and being on, you know, a tagged line of phone calls and everything shouldn't be that hard, but actually getting the information passed along, I think, is maybe going to be a little more complicated.
Except they're all dealing with the same thing. So it's not easier for Denver than it is for New York or Jacksonville. And I was talking with Mike Yammer earlier. He did an appearance at Linfield College, and you could see on his Twitter feed they had like 12 people involved. And, you know, he got a call. They set it up. I'm sure the NFL, which is working on it now, 3 weeks in advance, I just, security-wise, I could see them being concerned, and safety-wise, having people in the home. But connectivity-wise, and the GMs acting like they're going to have problems getting their picks in, it's like, that I don't see at all.
No, oh, I know, but it's just you can have a small classroom with 12 people on a call listening and having a conversation, but you need, like, each team in their war room is like a team of like 10 or 12, and then you multiply that to 32 teams. Like, you can't have like 700 people in a Zoom call and people trying to mute mics, and then they're trying to talk to each other and they're setting up other things. Like, I don't know if maybe there's going to be a group call altogether, and I don't know. Setting it up should be simple, but then having everybody know what's going on along the line without there being some massive, like, you know, gigantic text chain or a bunch of emails being sent out from the league office every 5 minutes on picks, like, the logistics of it, I think, are more complicated, and that's what they're trying to complain about rather than just being like, I don't know how to computer.
Well, actually, somebody just sent a very interesting text, and sometimes you realize that these guys deal with first world problems. About the NFL draft, yes, it's going to be different and a little difficult than in all caps, just like everyone else is dealing with in life.
It's very true.
All right. And by the way, about three people have texted and said they wanted to give a shout out to their fellow listeners for a great show today and all the entertainment and all the content. So, for 3 hours, it's really cool to be able to sit here and do a radio show like it's sort of normal, even though it's not. All right. With that thought in mind, let us take a break, and we'll come back and wrap up a Wednesday. 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbrewed Sports Desk for the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that's made to chill. I'm back in the luxurious KUJZ studios for the tweet of the day, like I just mentioned. Oregon women's basketball at Oregon WBB put out an awesome video of Sabrina the Goat. Just a video of a man in Romania looking for his goat that is, of course, named Sabrina. It is too perfect. He finds the goat, says, oh, there you are, Sabrina, walks the goat all the way home, and then flipping through the channels, goes off of, I think, maybe a little EuroLeague basketball, a little soccer. Nope, gotta watch Sabrina play. It's a great commercial. You should check it out. Also, a fantastic nominee today, a pair of them going together. The Atlanta Falcons released their new jerseys today. They included the gradient jersey I talked about yesterday, which is just god-awful. It's such a bad-looking jersey. It's so bad. But the big thing everybody was making fun of was the Falcons' all-black uniform that has a red stripe down the side. The Falcons' colors are black and red. They're wearing black and red. Well, everybody also tends to think that they are the same team that Adam Sandler played on in the remake of The Longest Yard? 9 yards?
Yeah, The Longest Yard.
So the Carolina Panthers posted a meme video cut up making fun of the Falcons with some hysterical laughing. And at Adam Schefter, who now this is, I think it's the first time he tweeted it, he was very serious, but now he's turned it into a joke. He just tweeted, assault. Which is very funny. If you remember when Myles Garrett bopped Mason Rudolph on the head with his helmet, Adam Schefter took the video, found it immediately, and the first thing he put out there was assault. Just taking the conversation from WTF Mason, or Myles Garrett, what are you doing to Mason Rudolph, to, oh wait, can Mason Rudolph like actually like charge him with assault at this point? Just jump the level. So now Adam Schefter does it for fun. But our tweet of the day comes from at Joey Molinaro. Is that right? Joey Molinaro. He's a guy who does, he kind of found some internet fame by doing an incredible Nick Saban impersonation. And the big story today we didn't talk about was Nick Saban sometime this week, during quarantine, got email for the first time. apparently his wife had been handling all of his business that had to be done during emails for who knows how long, probably the last two decades when, you know, the internet's been around. And Nick Saban just got to it. And so at Joey Molinaro with an incredible video of what it was like with Nick Saban setting up a Gmail account. So check that video out. It is hilarious. You can find it on our Twitter page at 953thescore. You can also see our Green Hill Pet of the Week. You can also see Mason, the Green Hill Pet of the Week, on our Instagram at 953thescore. And find us on Facebook at 953thescore as well. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Do not be a jerk. Just do it.
JDI for that guy. We welcome you back to the final few moments of Sports Talk on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, I don't know where that came from. I would hope to land Aaron Fentress. And if we ever hit a lull, we've got some good interviews queued up. But I'll tell you what, nothing was going to top you guys today. You took the baton and took off. You ran that. Whatever the record is for the anchor leg of the 400 relay, it's now shattered. You guys own it. You just took the proverbial Sports Talk ball and ran. Run, Forrest, run. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Maybe not. Did you guys hear about Jameis Winston? So I actually loved his spin because, in essence, the Bucks dumped him in favor of Tom Brady. And he said it's an honor, called Brady the GOAT, and said to get to replace by Brady in a city you love so much, I guess that's kudos for me, meaning him. So I guess I guess that's the best way to look at it. I don't know if breakups usually go that smooth. Wait, she dumped me for somebody better. Oh, good on me. Oh, okay. And by the way, then after I'm like, because normally if a story involves Winston, I'm like, oh, this guy. So he just got married and had a wedding at his home, March 27th. Said it was he and his bride who stood 3 feet apart. I don't know what that does. There was a minister behind them, their parents, and limited guests. And I'm like, well, that seems risky. I mean, I guess for a legal wedding, I guess who the hell knows if it's in Florida, who knows what the laws are in that lunatic asylum. But it just seems risky. But of course, this is a guy who doesn't think twice to throw any into like quadruple coverage, because that's how you end up with 30 picks. But that seemed like, wait a minute, dude, what exactly are you doing here? You're going to have a wedding now, unless it's just you, your wife, and the minister and a witness via teleconference. It doesn't seem like the wisest thing to do. So again, for tomorrow, we got to start thinking about two sports guys, athletes who then became musicians, plus whatever's up our sleeve for a Thursday. Oh, you know, it's amazing. We were talking the other day about father-son combos and how Brett and Bobby Hull are the only two I could think of who were both in their respective Hall of Fame. And then I asked, what about Little E, Dale Earnhardt Jr.? And he got nominated as a finalist for the Hall of Fame. Obviously, Dad is in it over the weekend. So there. Thanks to all of you guys who are the champs. Be safe. Be well. We'll catch you tomorrow for Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.